While you fumble your way north, trying to find me, my armies will destroy your precious camps. First the Romans, then the others. You cannot win, little demigod.
Percy lurched awake in cold gray daylight, rain falling on his face.
I thought I slept heavily, Hazel said. Welcome to Portland.
Percy sat up and blinked. The scene around him was so different from his dream, he wasn't sure which was real. The packs floated on an iron-black river through the middle of a city. Heavy clouds hung low overhead. The cold rain was so light it seemed suspended in the air. On Percy's left were industrial warehouses and railroad tracks. To his right was a small downtown area, an almost cozy-looking cluster of towers between the banks of the river and a line of misty forested hills. Percy rubbed the sleep out of his eyes.
How did we get here?
Frank gave him a look like, you won't believe this.
The killer whale took us as far as the Columbia River. Then he passed the harness to a couple of 12-foot sturgeons.
Percy thought Frank had said, surgeons. He had this weird image of giant doctors in scrubs and face masks pulling their boat upstream. Then he realized Frank meant sturgeons, like the fish. He was glad he hadn't said anything. Would have been embarrassing, his being son of the sea god and all. Anyway, Frank continued, the sturgeons pulled us for a long time. Hazel and I took turns sleeping. Then we hit this river.
The Willamette, Hazel offered.
Right, Frank said. After that, the boat kind of took over and navigated us here all by itself. Sleep okay?
As the packs glided south, Percy told them about his dreams. He tried to focus on the positive. A warship might be on the way to help Camp Jupiter. A friendly cyclops and a giant dog were looking for him. He didn't mention what Gia had said. Your friends will die. When Percy described the Roman fort on the ice, Hazel looked troubled.
So Alcyoneus is on a glacier, she said. That doesn't narrow it down much. Alaska has hundreds of those.
Percy nodded.
Maybe this seer dude, Phineas, can tell us which one.
The boat docked itself at a wharf. The three demigods stared up at the buildings of drizzly downtown Portland. Frank wiped the rain off his flat-top hair.
So now we find a blind man in the rain, Frank said. Yay!
Chapter 26. Percy.
It wasn't as hard as they thought. The screaming and the weed whacker helped. They'd brought lightweight polar tech jackets with their supplies, so they bundled up against the cold rain and walked for a few blocks through the mostly deserted streets. This time Percy was smart and brought most of his supplies from the boat. He even stuffed the macrobiotic jerky in his coat pocket, in case he needed to threaten any more killer whales. They saw some bicycle traffic and a few homeless guys huddled in doorways, but the majority of Portlanders seemed to be staying indoors. As they made their way down Gleason Street, Percy looked longingly at the folks in the cafes enjoying coffee and pastries. He was about to suggest that they stop for breakfast when he heard a voice down the street yelling,
"Ha! Take that, stupid chickens!"
followed by the revving of a small engine and a lot of squawking. Percy glanced at his friends.
You think?
Probably, Frank agreed.
They ran toward the sounds. The next block over, they found a big open parking lot with tree-lined sidewalks and rows of food trucks facing the streets on all four sides. Percy had seen food trucks before, but never so many in one place. Some were simple white metal boxes on wheels with awnings and serving counters. Others were painted blue or purple or polka-dotted, with big banners out front and colorful menu boards and tables like do-it-yourself sidewalk cafes. One advertised Korean-slash-Brazilian fusion tacos, which sounded like some kind of top-secret radioactive cuisine. Another offered sushi on a stick. A third was selling deep-fried ice cream sandwiches. The smell was amazing. Dozens of different kitchens cooking at once. Percy's stomach rumbled. Most of the food carts were open for business, but there was hardly anyone around. They could get anything they wanted.
deep-fried ice cream sandwiches? Oh, man, that sounded way better than wheat germ.
Unfortunately, there was more happening than just cooking. In the center of the lot, behind all the food trucks, an old man in a bathrobe was running around with a weed whacker, screaming at a flock of bird ladies who were trying to steal food off a picnic table.
"Harpies," said Hazel, "which means..."
"That's Phineas," Frank guessed.
They ran across the street and squeezed between the Korean-slash-Brazilian truck and a Chinese egg roll burrito vendor. The backs of the food trucks weren't nearly as appetizing as the fronts. They were cluttered with stacks of plastic buckets, overflowing garbage cans, and makeshift clotheslines hung with wet aprons and towels. The parking lot itself was nothing but a square of cracked asphalt, marbled with weeds. In the middle was a picnic table piled high with food from all the different trucks. The guy in the bathrobe was old and fat. He was mostly bald, with scars across his forehead and a rim of stringy white hair. His bathrobe was spattered with ketchup, and he kept stumbling around in fuzzy pink bunny slippers, swinging his gas-powered weed whacker at the half-dozen harpies who were hovering over his picnic table. He was clearly blind. His eyes were milky white, and usually he missed the harpies by a lot, but he was still doing a pretty good job fending them off.
"Back, dirty chickens!" he bellowed.
Percy wasn't sure why, but he had a vague sense that harpies were supposed to be plump. These looked like they were starving. Their human faces had sunken eyes and hollow cheeks. Their bodies were covered in molting feathers, and their wings were tipped with tiny, shriveled hands. They wore ragged burlap sacks for dresses. As they dived for the food, they seemed more desperate than angry. Percy felt sorry for them.
"Whirr!"
The old man swung his weed whacker. He grazed one of the harpy's wings. The harpy yelped in pain and fluttered off, dropping yellow feathers as she flew. Another harpy circled higher than the rest. She looked younger and smaller than the others, with bright red feathers. She watched carefully for an opening, and when the old man's back was turned, she made a wild dive for the table. She grabbed a burrito in her clawed feet. But before she could escape, the blind man swung his weed whacker and smacked her in the back so hard, Percy winced. The harpy yelped, dropped the burrito, and flew off.
"Hey, stop it!" Percy yelled.
The harpies took that the wrong way. They glanced over at the three demigods and immediately fled. Most of them fluttered away and perched in the trees around the square, staring dejectedly at the picnic table. The red-feathered one with the hurt back flew unsteadily down Gleason Street and out of sight.
"Ha!"
the blind man yelled in triumph and killed the power on his weed whacker. He grinned vacantly in Percy's direction.
"Thank you, strangers. Your help is most appreciated."
Percy bit back his anger. He hadn't meant to help the old man, but he remembered that they needed information from him.
Whatever. He approached the old guy, keeping one eye on the weed whacker. "I'm Percy Jackson. This is..."
"Demigods," the old man said. "I can always smell demigods."
Hazel frowned.
"Do we smell that bad?"
The old man laughed.
"Of course not, my dear. But you'd be surprised how sharp my other senses became once I was blinded. I'm Phineas, and you..." "Wait, don't tell me."
He reached for Percy's face and poked him in the eyes.
"Ow!"
Percy complained.
"Son of Neptune!" Phineas exclaimed. "I thought I smelled the ocean on you, Percy Jackson. I'm also a son of Neptune, you know."
"Hey, yeah, okay."
Percy rubbed his eyes. Just his luck he was related to this grubby old dude. He hoped all sons of Neptune didn't share the same fate. First you start carrying a man satchel. Next thing you know, you're running around in a bathrobe and pink bunny slippers chasing chickens with a weed whacker. Phineas turned to Hazel.
"And here, oh my, the smell of gold and deep earth. Hazel Levesque, daughter of Pluto. And next to you, the son of Mars. But there's more to your story, Frank Jung."
"Ancient blood," Frank muttered. "Prince of Pelos, blah, blah, blah."
"Paracliminus, exactly," Oh, he was a nice fellow. I loved the Argonauts.
Frank's mouth fell open.
Wait, Perry who?
Phineas grinned.
Don't worry, I know about your family. That story about your great-grandfather? He didn't really destroy the camp. Now, what an interesting group. Are you hungry?
Frank looked like he'd been run over by a truck, but Phineas had already moved on to other matters. He waved his hand at the picnic table. In the nearby trees, the harpies shrieked miserably. As hungry as Percy was, he couldn't stand to think about eating with those poor bird ladies watching him.
Look, I'm confused, Percy said. We need some information. We were told
that the harpies were keeping my food away from me.
Phineas finished.
And if you helped me, I'd help you.
Something like that, Percy admitted. Phineas laughed.
That's old news. Do I look like I'm missing any meals?
He patted his belly, which was the size of an overinflated basketball.
No, Percy said.
Phineas waved his weed whacker in an expansive gesture. All three of them ducked.
Things have changed, my friends, he said. When I first got the gift of prophecy, eons ago, it's true Jupiter cursed me. He sent the harpies to steal my food. You see, I had a bit of a big mouth. I gave away too many secrets that the gods wanted kept.
He turned to Hazel.
For instance, you're supposed to be dead. And you,
he turned to Frank.
Your life depends on a burned stick.
Percy frowned.
What are you talking about?
Hazel blinked like she'd been slapped. Frank looked like the truck had backed up and run over him again.
And you.
Phineas turned to Percy.
Well now, you don't even know who you are. I could tell you, of course, but... Ha! What fun would that be? And Bridget O'Shaughnessy shot Miles Archer in the Maltese Falcon. And Darth Vader is actually Luke's father. And the winner of the next Super Bowl will be...
Got it, Frank muttered. Hazel gripped her sword like she was tempted to pommel whip the old man.
So you talked too much, and the gods cursed you. Why did they stop?
Oh, they didn't!
The old man arched his bushy eyebrows like... Can you believe it?
I had to make a deal with the Argonauts. They wanted information, too, you see. I told them to kill the harpies and I'd cooperate. Well, they drove those nasty creatures away. But Iris wouldn't let them kill the harpies. An outrage. So this time, when my patron brought me back to life...
Your patron? Frank asked.
Phineas gave him a wicked grin.
Why, Gia, of course. Who do you think opened the doors of death? Your girlfriend here understands. Isn't Gia your patron, too?
Hazel drew her sword.
I'm not his... Gia is not my patron.
Phineas looked amused. If he had heard the sword being drawn, he didn't seem concerned.
Fine. If you want to be noble and stick with the losing side, that's your business. But Gia is waking. She's already rewritten the rules of life and death. I'm alive again, and in exchange for my help, a prophecy here, a prophecy there, I get my fondest wish. The tables have turned, so to speak. Now I can eat all I want, all day long. And the harpies have to watch and starve.
He revved his weed whacker and the harpies wailed in the trees.
They're cursed, the old man said. They can eat only food from my table, and they can't leave Portland. Since the doors of death are open, they can't even die. It's beautiful.
Beautiful? Frank protested. They're living creatures. Why are you so mean to them?
They're monsters, Phineas said. And mean? Those feather-brained demons tormented me for years.
But it was their duty, Percy said, trying to control himself. Jupiter ordered them to.
Oh, I'm mad at Jupiter, too,
Phineas agreed.
In time, Gia will see that the gods are properly punished. Horrible job they've done ruling the world. But for now, I'm enjoying Portland. The mortals take no notice of me. They think I'm just a crazy old man shooing away pigeons.
Hazel advanced on the seer. You're awful, she told Phineas. You belong in the fields of punishment.
Phineas sneered.
One dead person to another, girlie. I wouldn't be talking. You started this whole thing. If it weren't for you, Alcyonius wouldn't be alive.
Hazel stumbled back.
Hazel? Frank's eyes got as wide as quarters. What's he talking about?
Ha! Phineas said. You'll find out soon enough, Frank Jong. Then we'll see if you're still sweet on your girlfriend. But that's not what you're here about, is it? You want to find Thanatos. He's being kept at Alcyonius' lair. I could tell you where that is. Of course I can. But you'll have to do me a favor.
Forget it, Hazel snapped. You're working for the enemy. We should send you back to the underworld ourselves.
You could try, Phineas smiled. But I doubt I'd stay dead very long. You see, Gia has shown me the easy way back, and with Thanatos in chains, there's no one to keep me down. Besides, if you kill me, you won't get my secrets.
Percy was tempted to let Hazel use her sword. In fact, he wanted to strangle the old man himself.
Camp Jupiter, he told himself. Saving the camp is more important.
He remembered Alcyonius taunting him in his dreams. If they wasted time searching through Alaska looking for the giant's lair, Gia's armies would destroy the Romans and Percy's other friends, wherever they were. He gritted his teeth.
What's the favor?
Phineas licked his lips greedily.
There's one harpy who's quicker than the rest.
The red one, Percy guessed.
I'm blind. I don't know colors,
the old man groused.
At any rate, she's the only one I have trouble with. She's wily, that one. Always does her own thing. Never roosts with the others. She gave me these.
He pointed at the scars on his forehead.
Capture that harpy, he said. Bring her to me. I want her tied up where I can keep an eye on her. Ah, so to speak. Harpies hate being tied up. It causes them extreme pain. Yes, I'll enjoy that. Maybe I'll even feed her so that she lasts longer.
Percy looked at his friends. They came to a silent agreement. They would never help this creepy old man. On the other hand, they had to get his information. They needed a plan B.
Oh, go talk among yourselves, Phineas said breezily. I don't care. Just remember that without my help, your quest will fail, and everyone you love in the world will die. Now off with you. Bring me a harpy.
Chapter 27 Percy
We'll need some of your food.
Percy shouldered his way around the old man and snatched stuff off the picnic table. A covered bowl of Thai noodles and mac and cheese sauce, and a tubular pastry that looked like a combination burrito and cinnamon roll. Before he could lose control and smash the burrito in Phineas's face, Percy said,
Come on, guys.
He led his friends out of the parking lot. They stopped across the street. Percy took a deep breath, trying to calm down. The rain had slowed to a half-hearted drizzle. The cold mist felt good on his face.
That man, Hazel smacked the side of a bus stop bench. He needs to die. Again.
It was hard to tell in the rain, but she seemed to be blinking back tears. Her long, curly hair was plastered down the sides of her face. In the gray light, her gold eyes looked more like tin. Percy remembered how confident she'd acted when they first met, taking control of the situation with the Gorgons and ushering him to safety. She'd comforted him at the Shrine of Neptune and made him feel welcome at camp. Now he wanted to return the favor, but he wasn't sure how. She looked lost, bedraggled, and thoroughly depressed. Percy wasn't surprised that she had come back from the underworld. He'd suspected that for a while, the way she avoided talking about her past, the way Nico D'Angelo had been so secretive and cautious. But that didn't change how Percy saw her. She seemed, well, alive, like a regular kid with a good heart, who deserved to grow up and have a future. She wasn't a ghoul like Phineas.
"We'll get him," Percy promised. "He's nothing like you, Hazel. I don't care what he says."
She shook her head. "You don't know the whole story. I should have been sent to punishment. I'm just as bad."
"No, you're not!"
Frank balled his fists. He looked around like he was searching for anybody who might disagree with him, enemies he could hit for Hazel's sake.
"She's a good person!" he yelled across the street.
A few harpies squawked in the trees, but no one else paid them any attention. Hazel stared at Frank. She reached out tentatively as if she wanted to take his hand but was afraid he might evaporate.
"Frank," she stammered, I don't..."
Unfortunately, Frank seemed wrapped up in his own thoughts. He slung his spear off his back and gripped it uneasily.
"I could intimidate that old man," he offered. "Maybe scare him."
"Frank, it's okay," Percy said. "Let's keep that as a backup plan. But I don't think Phineas can be scared into cooperating. Besides, you've only got 2 more uses out of the spear, right?"
Frank scowled at the dragon's tooth point, which had grown back completely overnight.
"Yeah, I guess."
Percy wasn't sure what the old seer had meant about Frank's family history, his great-grandfather destroying camp, his Argonaut ancestor, and the bit about a burned stick controlling Frank's life. But it had clearly shaken Frank up. Percy decided not to ask for explanations. He didn't want the big guy reduced to tears, especially in front of Hazel.
"I've got an idea."
Percy pointed up the street.
"The red-feathered harpy went that way. Let's see if we can get her to talk to us."
Hazel looked at the food in his hands.
"You're going to use that as bait?"
"More like a peace offering," Percy said.
"Come on, just try to keep the other harpies from stealing this stuff, okay?"
Percy uncovered the Thai noodles and unwrapped the cinnamon burrito. Fragrant steam wafted into the air. They walked down the street, Hazel and Frank with their weapons out. The harpies fluttered after them, perching on trees, mailboxes, and flagpoles, following the smell of food. Percy wondered what the mortals saw through the mist. Maybe they thought the harpies were pigeons and the weapons were lacrosse sticks or something. Maybe they just thought the Thai mac and cheese was so good it needed an armed escort. Percy kept a tight grip on the food. He'd seen how quickly the harpies could snatch things. He didn't want to lose his peace offering before he found the red-feathered harpy. Finally, he spotted her, circling above a stretch of parkland that ran for several blocks between rows of old stone buildings. Paths stretched through the park under huge maple and elm trees, past sculptures and playgrounds and shady benches. The place reminded Percy of some other park. Maybe in his hometown? He couldn't remember, but it made him feel homesick. They crossed the street and found a bench to sit on, next to a big bronze sculpture of an elephant.
"Looks like Hannibal," Hazel said.
"Except it's Chinese," Frank said. "My grandmother has one of those."
He flinched.
"I mean, hers isn't 12 feet tall, but she imports stuff from China. We're Chinese."
He looked at Hazel and Percy, who were trying hard not to laugh.
"Could I just die from embarrassment now?" he asked.
"Don't worry about it, man," Percy said. "Let's see if we can make friends with the harpy."
He raised the Thai noodles and fanned the smell upward, spicy peppers and cheesy goodness. The red harpy circled lower.
"We won't hurt you," Percy called up in a normal voice. "We just want to talk. Thai noodles for a chance to talk, okay?"
The harpy streaked down in a flash of red and landed on the elephant statue. She was painfully thin. Her feathery legs were like sticks. Her face would have been pretty except for her sunken cheeks. She moved in jerky bird-like twitches, her coffee-brown eyes darting restlessly, her fingers clawing at her plumage, her earlobes, her shaggy red hair.
"Cheese,"
she muttered, looking sideways.
"Ella doesn't like cheese."
Percy hesitated.
"Your name is Ella?" "Ella, Ayala, Harpy, in English, in Latin. Ella doesn't like cheese."
She said all that without taking a breath or making eye contact. Her hand snatched at her hair, her burlap dress, the raindrops, whatever moved. Quicker than Percy could blink, she lunged, snatched the cinnamon burrito, and appeared atop the elephant again.
"God, she's fast," Hazel said.
"And heavily caffeinated," Frank guessed. Ella sniffed the burrito. She nibbled at the edge and shuddered from head to foot, cawing like she was dying.
"Cinnamon is good," she pronounced. "Good for harpies. Yum."
She started to eat, but the bigger harpies swooped down. Before Percy could react, they began pummeling Ella with their wings, snatching at the burrito.
"No!"
Ella tried to hide under her wings as her sisters ganged up on her, scratching with their claws.
"No!" she stuttered. "No!"
"Stop it!"
Percy yelled. He and his friends ran to help, but it was too late. A big yellow harpy grabbed the burrito and the whole flock scattered, leaving Ella cowering and shivering on top of the elephant. Hazel touched the harpy's foot.
"I'm so sorry. Are you okay?"
Ella poked her head out of her wings. She was still trembling, with her shoulders hunched. Percy could see the bleeding gash on her back where Phineas had hit her with the weed whacker. She picked at her feathers, pulling out tufts of plumage.
"Small Ella," she stuttered angrily. "Weak Ella. No cinnamon for Ella. Only cheese."
Frank glared across the street, where the other harpies were sitting in a maple tree tearing the burrito to shreds.
"We'll get you something else," he promised.
Percy set down the Thai noodles. He realized that Ella was different, even for a harpy. But after watching her get picked on, he was sure of one thing. Whatever else happened, he was going to help her.
"Ella," he said, "we want to be your friends. We can get you more food, but..."
"Friends," Ella said. 10 seasons, 1994 to 2004.
She glanced sideways at Percy, then looked in the air and started reciting to the clouds.
"A half-blood of the eldest gods shall reach 16 against all odds. 16, you're 16, page 16, mastering the art of French cooking, ingredients, bacon, butter."
Percy's ears were ringing. He felt dizzy, like he just plunged 100 feet underwater and back up again.
"Ella, what was that you said?"
"Bacon."
She caught a raindrop out of the air.
"Butter."
"No, before that. Those lines. I know those lines."
Next to him, Hazel shivered.
"It does sound familiar. Like, I don't know, like a prophecy. Maybe it's something she heard Phineas say."
At the name Phineas, Ella squawked in terror and flew away.
"Wait," Hazel called. "I didn't mean... Oh, gods, I'm stupid."
"It's all right," Frank pointed. "Look."
Ella wasn't moving as quickly now. She flapped her way to the top of a 3-story red brick building and scuttled out of sight over the roof. A single red feather fluttered down to the street.
"You think that's her nest?"
Frank squinted at the sign on the building.
"Multnomah County Library?"
Percy nodded.
"Let's see if it's open."
They ran across the street and into the lobby. A library wouldn't have been Percy's first choice for some place to visit. With his dyslexia, he had enough trouble reading signs. A whole building full of books? That sounded about as much fun as Chinese water torture or getting his teeth extracted. As they jogged through the lobby, Percy figured Annabeth would like this place. It was spacious and brightly lit, with big vaulted windows. Books and architecture, that was definitely her.
He froze in his tracks.
"Percy?" Frank asked. "What's wrong?"
Percy tried desperately to concentrate. Where had those thoughts come from? Architecture. Books. Annabeth had taken him to the library once, back home in... The memory faded. Percy slammed his fist into the side of a bookshelf.
"Percy?"
Hazel asked gently. He was so angry, so frustrated with his missing memories that he wanted to punch another bookshelf, but his friends' concerned faces brought him back to the present.
I'm all right," he lied. "Just got dizzy for a sec. Let's find a way to the roof."
It took them a while, but they finally found a stairwell with roof access. At the top was a door with a handle alarm, but someone had propped it open with a copy of War and Peace. Outside, Ella the Harpy huddled in a nest of books under a makeshift cardboard shelter. Percy and his friends advanced slowly, trying not to scare her. Ella didn't pay them any attention. She picked at her feathers and muttered under her breath, like she was practicing lines for a play. Percy got within 5 feet and knelt down.
"Hi. Sorry we scared you. Look, I don't have much food, but..."
He took some of the macrobiotic jerky out of his pocket. Ella lunged and snatched it immediately. She huddled back in her nest, sniffing the jerky, but sighed and tossed it away.
"Not from his table. Ella cannot eat. Sad. Jerky would be good for harpies."
"Not from..." "Oh, right," Percy said. "That's part of the curse. You can only eat his food."
"There has to be a way," Hazel said.
"Photosynthesis,"
Ella muttered.
"Noun, biology, the synthesis of complex organic materials. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, it was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness."
"What is she saying?" Frank whispered.
Percy stared at the mound of books around her. They all looked old and mildewed. Some had prices written in marker on the covers, like the library had gotten rid of them in a clearance sale.
"She's quoting books," Percy guessed.
"Farmer's Almanac, 1965, Ella said. "Start breeding animals, January 26th.
"Ella," he said, "have you read all of these?"
She blinked.
More downstairs. Words, words calm Ella down. Words, words, words."
Percy picked up a book at random, a tattered copy of A History of Horse Racing.
"Ella, do you remember the, third paragraph on page 62?
"Secretariat," Ella said instantly. "Favored 3-2 in the 1973 Kentucky Derby. Finished at standing track record of 1:59 2/5.
Percy closed the book. His hands were shaking.
"Word for word."
"That's amazing," Hazel said.
"She's a genius chicken,"
Frank agreed. Percy felt uneasy. He was starting to form a terrible idea about why Phineas wanted to capture Ella, and it wasn't because she'd scratched him. Percy remembered that line she'd recited, "A half-blood of the eldest gods." He was sure it was about him.
"Ella," he said, "we're going to find a way to break the curse. Would you like that?"
"It's impossible," she said. "Recorded in English by Perry Como, 1970.
"Nothing's impossible," Percy said. "Now look, I'm going to say his name. You don't have to run away. We're going to save you from the curse. We just need to figure out a way to beat Phineas."
He waited for her to bolt, but she just shook her head vigorously.
No, Phineas. Ella is quick, too quick for him. But he wants to chain Ella. He hurts Ella."
She tried to reach the gash on her back.
"Frank," Percy said, "you have first aid supplies?"
"On it." Frank brought out a thermos full of nectar and explained its healing properties to Ella. When he scooted closer, she recoiled and started to shriek. Then Hazel tried, and Ella let her pour some nectar on her back. The wound began to close. Hazel smiled.
"See? That's better."
"Phineas is bad," Ella insisted, "and weed whackers, and cheese."
"Absolutely," Percy agreed. "We won't let him hurt you again. We need to figure out how to trick him, though. You harpies must know him better than anybody. Is there any way we can trick him?"
"No, Ella said. "Tricks are for kids. 50 Tricks to Teach Your Dog by Sophie Collins. Call number 636.
"Okay, Ella,"
Hazel spoke in a soothing voice, like she was trying to calm a horse.
"But does Phineas have any weaknesses?"
"Blind. He's blind."
Frank rolled his eyes, but Hazel continued patiently.
"Right. Besides that?"
"Chance," she said. "Games of chance. 2-1. Bad odds. Call or fold."
Percy's spirits rose.
"You mean he's a gambler?"
"Phineas sees big things. Prophecies, fates, God stuff. Not small stuff. Random, exciting. And he is blind."
Frank rubbed his chin.
"Any idea what she means?"
Percy watched the harpy pick at her burlap dress. He felt incredibly sorry for her, but he was also starting to realize just how smart she was.
I think I get it, he said. Phineas sees the future. He knows tons of important events, but he can't see small things, like random occurrences, spontaneous games of chance. That makes gambling exciting for him, if we can tempt him into making a bet.
Hazel nodded slowly.
You mean if he loses, he has to tell us where Thanatos is. But what do we have to wager? What kind of game do we play?
Something simple, with high stakes, Percy said. Like two choices. One you live, one you die. And the prize has to be something Phineas wants. I mean, besides Ella. That's off the table.
Sight, Ella muttered. Sight is good for blind men. Healing. Nope, nope. Gia won't do that for Phineas. Gia keeps Phineas blind, dependent on Gia. Yep.
Frank and Percy exchanged a meaningful look. Gorgon's blood, they said simultaneously.
What?
Hazel asked. Frank brought out the two ceramic vials he'd retrieved from the little Tiber.
Ella's a genius, he said.
Unless we die.
Don't worry about that, Percy said. I've got a plan.
Chapter 28 Percy. The old man was right where they'd left him, in the middle of the food truck parking lot. He sat on his picnic bench with his bunny slippers propped up, eating a plate of greasy shish kebab. His weed whacker was at his side. His bathrobe was smeared with barbecue sauce.
Welcome back, he called cheerfully. I hear the flutter of nervous little wings. You've brought me my harpy.
She's here, Percy said, but she's not yours.
Phineas sucked the grease off his fingers. His milky eyes seemed fixed on a point just above Percy's head.
I see. Well, actually, I'm blind, so I don't see. Have you come to kill me, then? If so, good luck completing your quest.
I've come to gamble.
The old man's mouth twitched. He put down his shish kebab and leaned toward Percy.
A gamble? How interesting. Information in exchange for the harpy? Winner take all?
No, Percy said. The harpy isn't part of the deal.
Phineas laughed.
Really? Perhaps you don't understand her value.
She's a person, Percy said. She isn't for sale.
Oh, please. You're from the Roman camp, aren't you? Rome was built on slavery. Don't get all high and mighty with me. Besides, she isn't even human. She's a monster, a wind spirit, a minion of Jupiter.
Ella squawked. Just getting her into the parking lot had been a major challenge. But now she started backing away, muttering,
Jupiter, hydrogen and helium, 63 satellites, no minions, nope.
Hazel put her arm around Ella's wings. She seemed to be the only one who could touch the harpy without causing lots of screaming and twitching. Frank stayed at Percy's side. He held his spear ready, as if the old man might charge them. Percy brought out the ceramic vials.
I have a different wager. We've got two flasks of Gorgon's blood. One kills, one heals. They look exactly the same. Even we don't know which is which. If you choose the right one, it could cure your blindness.
Phineas held out his hands eagerly.
Let me feel them. Let me smell them.
Not so fast, Percy said. First, you agree to the terms.
Terms,
Phineas was breathing shallowly. Percy could tell he was hungry to take the offer.
Prophecy and sight. I'd be unstoppable. I could own this city. I'd build my palace here, surrounded by food trucks. I could capture that harpy myself.
No,
Ella said nervously.
Nope, nope, nope.
A villainous laugh is hard to pull off when you're wearing pink bunny slippers, but Phineas gave it his best shot.
Very well, demigod. What are your terms?
You get to choose a vial, Percy said. No uncorking, no sniffing before you decide.
That's not fair. I'm blind.
And I don't have your sense of smell, Percy countered.
You can hold the vials, and I'll swear on the River Styx that they look identical. They're exactly what I told you. Gorgon's blood. One vial from the left side of the monster, one from the right. And I swear that none of us knows which is which.
Percy looked back at Hazel.
You're our underworld expert. With all this weird stuff going on with death, is an oath on the River Styx still binding?
Yes, she said, without hesitation. To break such a vow... Well, just don't do it. There are worse things than death.
Phineas stroked his beard.
So I choose which vial to drink. You have to drink the other one. We swear to drink at the same time.
Right,
Percy said.
The loser dies, obviously,
Phineas said.
That kind of poison would probably keep even me from coming back to life. For a long time, at least. My essence would be scattered and degraded. So I'm risking quite a lot.
But if you win, you get everything, Percy said. If I die, my friends will swear to leave you in peace and not take revenge. You'd have your sight back, which even Gia won't give you. The old man's expression soured. Percy could tell he'd struck a nerve. Phineas wanted to see. As much as Gia had given him, he resented being kept in the dark.
If I lose, the old man said, I'll be dead, unable to give you information. How does that help you?
Percy was glad he'd talked this through with his friends ahead of time. Frank had suggested the answer. You write down the location of Alcyoneus's lair ahead of time, Percy said. Keep it to yourself, but swear on the River Styx it's specific and accurate. You also have to swear that if you lose and die, the harpies will be released from their curse.
Those are high stakes, Phineas grumbled. You face death, Percy Jackson. Wouldn't it be simpler just to hand over the harpy?
Not an option, Phineas smiled slowly.
So you are starting to understand her worth. Once I have my sight, I'll capture her myself, you know. Whoever controls that harpy. Well, I was a king once. This gamble could make me a king again.
You're getting ahead of yourself, Percy said. Do we have a deal? Phineas tapped his nose thoughtfully.
I can't foresee the outcome. Annoying how that works. A completely unexpected gamble. It makes the future cloudy. But I can tell you this, Percy Jackson. A bit of free advice. If you survive today, you're not going to like your future. A big sacrifice is coming and you won't have the courage to make it. That will cost you dearly. It will cost the world dearly. It might be easier if you just choose the poison.
Percy's mouth tasted like Iris's sour green tea. He wanted to think the old man was just psyching him out, but something told him the prediction was true. He remembered Juno's warning when he'd chosen to go to Camp Jupiter.
You will feel pain, misery, and loss beyond anything you've ever known. But you might have a chance to save your old friends and family.
In the trees around the parking lot, the harpies gathered to watch as if they sensed what was at stake. Frank and Hazel studied Percy's face with concern. He'd assured them the odds weren't as bad as 50-50. He did have a plan. Of course, the plan could backfire. His chance of survival might be 100% or zero. He hadn't mentioned that.
Do we have a deal? He asked again.
Phineas grinned.
I swear on the River Styx to abide by the terms, just as you have described them. Frank Jong, you're the descendant of an Argonaut. I trust your word. If I win, do you and your friend Hazel swear to leave me in peace and not seek revenge?
Frank's hands were clenched so tight Percy thought he might break his gold spear, but he managed to grumble. I swear it on the River Styx.
I also swear, Hazel said. Swear, Ella muttered. Swear not by the moon. The inconstant moon.
Phineas laughed.
In that case, find me something to write with. Let's get started.
Frank borrowed a napkin and a pen from a food truck vendor. Phineas scribbled something on the napkin and put it in his bathrobe pocket.
I swear this is the location of Alcyoneus's lair. Not that you'll live long enough to read it.
Percy drew his sword and swept all the food off the picnic table. Phineas sat on one side. Percy sat on the other. Phineas held out his hands.
Let me feel the vials.
Percy gazed at the hills in the distance.
He imagined the shadowy face of a sleeping woman. He sent his thoughts into the ground beneath him and hoped the goddess was listening.
"Okay, Gia," he said. "I'm calling your bluff. You say I'm a valuable pawn. You say you've got plans for me, and you're going to spare me until I make it north. Who's more valuable to you, me or this old man? Because one of us is about to die."
Phineas curled his fingers in a grasping motion.
"Losing your nerve, Percy Jackson? Let me have them."
Percy passed him the vials. The old man compared their weight. He ran his fingers along the ceramic surfaces. Then he set them both on the table and rested one hand lightly on each. A tremor passed through the ground, a mild earthquake, just strong enough to make Percy's teeth chatter. Ella cawed nervously. The vial on the left seemed to shake slightly more than the one on the right. Phineas grinned wickedly. He closed his fingers around the left-hand vial.
"You are a fool, Percy Jackson. I choose this one. Now we drink."
Percy took the vial on the right. His teeth were chattering. The old man raised his vial.
"A toast to the sons of Neptune."
They both uncorked their vials and drank. Immediately, Percy doubled over, his throat burning. His mouth tasted like gasoline.
"Oh, gods," Hazel said behind him.
"Nope,"
Ella said. "Nope, nope, nope."
Percy's vision blurred. He could see Phineas grinning in triumph, sitting up straighter, blinking his eyes in anticipation.
"Yes," he cried. "Any moment now, my sight will return."
Percy had chosen wrong. He'd been stupid to take such a risk. He felt like broken glass was working its way through his stomach into his intestines.
"Percy!" Frank gripped his shoulders. "Percy, you can't die!"
He gasped for breath, and suddenly his vision cleared. At the same moment, Phineas hunched over like he'd been punched.
You can't!"
the old man wailed.
"Gia, you...
He staggered to his feet and stumbled away from the table, clutching his stomach.
"I'm too valuable."
Steam came out of his mouth. A sickly yellow vapor rose from his ears, his beard, his blind eyes.
"Unfair!"
he screamed.
"You tricked me!"
He tried to claw the piece of paper out of his robe pocket, but his hands crumbled, his fingers turning to sand. Percy rose unsteadily. He didn't feel cured of anything in particular. His memory hadn't magically returned. But the pain had stopped.
"No one tricked you," Percy said. "You made your choice freely, and I hold you to your oath."
The blind king wailed in agony. He turned in a circle, steaming and slowly disintegrating until there was nothing left but an old stained bathrobe and a pair of bunny slippers.
"Those?"
Frank said. "Are the most disgusting spoils of war ever." A woman's voice spoke in Percy's mind.
"A gamble, Percy Jackson." It was a sleepy whisper, with just a hint of grudging admiration. "You forced me to choose, and you are more important to my plans than the old seer. But do not press your luck. When your death comes, I promise it will be much more painful than Gorgon's blood."
Hazel prodded the robe with her sword. There was nothing underneath, no sign that Phineas was trying to reform. She looked at Percy in awe.
"That was either the bravest thing I've ever seen, or the stupidest."
Frank shook his head in disbelief.
"Percy, how did you know? You were so confident he'd choose the poison."
"Gia," Percy said. "She wants me to make it to Alaska. She thinks..."
"I'm not sure. She thinks she can use me as part of her plan. She influenced Phineas to choose the wrong vial." Frank stared in horror at the remains of the old man.
"Gia would kill her own servant rather than you? That's what you were betting on?"
"Plans," Ella muttered. "Plans and plots. The lady in the ground. Big plans for Percy. Macrobiotic jerky for Ella."
Percy handed her the whole bag of jerky, and she squeaked with joy.
"Nope, nope, nope," she muttered, half-singing. "Phineas, nope. Food and words for Ella, yep,
Percy crouched over the bathrobe and pulled the old man's note out of the pocket. It read, Hubbard Glacier. All that risk for two words. He handed the note to Hazel.
I know where that is, she said. It's pretty famous. But we've got a long, long way to go.
In the trees around the parking lot, the other harpies finally overcame their shock. They squawked with excitement and flew at the nearest food trucks, diving through the service windows and raiding the kitchens. Cooks shouted in many languages. Trucks shook back and forth. Feathers and food boxes flew everywhere.
We'd better get back to the boat, Percy said. We're running out of time.
Chapter 29 Hazel. Even before she got on the boat, Hazel felt queasy. She kept thinking about Phineas with steam coming out of his eyes, his hands crumbling to dust. Percy had assured her that she wasn't like Phineas. But she was. She'd done something even worse than torment harpies.
You started this whole thing, Phineas had said. If it weren't for you, Alcyoneus wouldn't be alive.
As the boat sped down the Columbia River, Hazel tried to forget. She helped Ella make a nest out of old books and magazines they liberated from the library's recycling bin. They hadn't really planned on taking the harpy with them, but Ella acted like the matter was decided.
Friends, she muttered, 10 seasons, 1994 to 2004. Friends melt Phineas and give Ella jerky. Ella will go with her friends.
Now she was roosting comfortably in the stern, nibbling bits of jerky and reciting random lines from Charles Dickens and 50 Tricks to Teach Your Dog. Percy knelt in the bow, steering them toward the ocean with his freaky mind-over-water powers. Hazel sat next to Frank on the center bench, their shoulders touching, which made her feel as jittery as a harpy. She remembered how Frank stood up for her in Portland, shouting, "She's a good person!" like he was ready to take on anybody who denied it. She remembered the way he had looked on the hillside in Mendocino, alone in a clearing of poisoned grass with his spear in hand, fires burning all around him and the ashes of 3 basilisks at his feet. A week ago, if someone had suggested that Frank was a child of Mars, Hazel would have laughed. Frank was much too sweet and gentle for that. She had always felt protective of him because of his clumsiness and his knack for getting into trouble. Since they'd left camp, she saw him differently. He had more courage than she'd realized. He was the one looking out for her. She had to admit that the change was kind of nice. The river widened into the ocean. The packs turned north. As they sailed, Frank kept her spirits up by telling her silly jokes. Why did the Minotaur cross the road? How many fawns does it take to change a light bulb? He pointed out buildings along the coastline that reminded him of places in Vancouver. The sky started to darken, the sea turning the same rusty color of Ella's wings. June 21st was almost over. The Feast of Fortuna would happen in the evening, exactly 72 hours from now. Finally, Frank brought out some food from his pack, sodas and muffins he'd scavenged from Phineas's table. He passed them around. "It's okay, Hazel," he said quietly. "My mom used to say you shouldn't try to carry a problem alone. But if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay." Hazel took a shaky breath. She was afraid to talk, not just because she was embarrassed. She didn't want to black out and slip into the past.
"You were right," she said. "When you guessed I came back from the underworld, I'm an escapee. I shouldn't be alive."
She felt like a dam had broken. The story flooded out. She explained how her mother had summoned Pluto and fallen in love with the god. She explained her mother's wish for all the riches in the earth, and how that had turned into Hazel's curse. She described her life in New Orleans, everything except her boyfriend Sammy. Looking at Frank, she couldn't bring herself to talk about that. She described the voice, and how Gia had slowly taken over her mother's mind. She explained how they had moved to Alaska, how Hazel had helped to raise the giant Alcyoneus, and how she had died, sinking the island into Resurrection Bay. She knew Percy and Ella were listening, but she spoke mostly to Frank. When she had finished, she was afraid to look at him. She waited for him to move away from her, maybe tell her she was a monster after all. Instead, he took her hand.
You sacrificed yourself to stop the giant from waking. I could never be that brave.
She felt her pulse throbbing in her neck.
It wasn't bravery. I let my mother die. I cooperated with Gia too long. I almost let her win.
Hazel, said Percy, you stood up to a goddess all by yourself. You did the right...
His voice trailed off, as if he'd had an unpleasant thought.
What happened in the underworld? I mean, after you died. You should have gone to Elysium. But if Nico brought you back...
I didn't go to Elysium.
Her mouth felt dry as sand.
Please don't ask.
But it was too late. She remembered her descent into the darkness, her arrival on the banks of the River Styx, and her consciousness began to slip.
Hazel?
Frank asked.
Slip sliding away, Ella muttered. Number 5, U.S. single, Paul Simon. Frank, go with her. Simon says, Frank, go with her.
Hazel had no idea what Ella was talking about, but her vision darkened as she clung to Frank's hand. She found herself back in the underworld, and this time Frank was at her side. They stood in Karen's boat, crossing the Styx. Debris swirled in the dark waters, a deflated birthday balloon, a child's pacifier, a little plastic bride and groom from the top of a cake, all the remnants of human lives cut short.
Where are we?
Frank stood at her side, shimmering with a ghostly purple light as if he'd become a Lar.
It's my past.
Hazel felt strangely calm.
It's just an echo. Don't worry.
The boatman turned and grinned. One moment he was a handsome African man in an expensive silk suit. The next moment he was a skeleton in a dark robe.
"Course you shouldn't worry," he said with a British accent.
He addressed Hazel, as if he couldn't see Frank at all.
"Told you I'd take you across, didn't I? It's all right, you don't have a coin. Wouldn't be proper, leaving Pluto's daughter on the wrong side of the river."
The boat slid onto a dark beach. Hazel led Frank to the black gates of Erebus. The spirits parted for them, sensing she was a child of Pluto. The giant three-headed dog Cerberus growled in the gloom, but he let them pass. Inside the gates, they walked into a large pavilion and stood before the judge's bench. Three black-robed figures in golden masks stared down at Hazel. Frank whimpered.
"Who?"
"They'll decide my fate," she said. "Watch."
Just as before, the judges asked her no questions. They simply looked into her mind, pulling thoughts from her head and examining them like a collection of old photos.
"What a Gia," the first judge said, "prevented Alcyoneus from waking."
"But she raised the giant in the first place," the second judge argued, "guilty of cowardice, weakness."
"She is young," said the third judge. "Her mother's life hung in the balance."
"My mother," Hazel found the courage to speak. "Where is she? What is her fate?"
The judges regarded her, their golden masks frozen in creepy smiles.
"Your mother."
The image of Marie Levesque shimmered above the judges. She was frozen in time, hugging Hazel as the cave collapsed, her eyes shut tight.
"An interesting question," the second judge said. "The division of fault."
"Yes," said the first judge. "The child died for a noble cause. She prevented many deaths by delaying the giant's rise. She had courage to stand against the might of Gia."
"But she acted too late," the third judge said sadly. "She is guilty of aiding and abetting an enemy of the gods."
"The mother influenced her," said the first judge. "The child can have Elysium, eternal punishment for Marie Levesque."
"No," Hazel shouted. "No, please, that's not fair."
The judges tilted their heads in unison. Gold masks, Hazel thought. Gold has always been cursed for me. She wondered if the gold was poisoning their thoughts somehow, so that they'd never give her a fair trial.
"Beware, Hazel Levesque," the first judge warned. "Would you take full responsibility? You could lay this guilt on your mother's soul. That would be reasonable.
You would